The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am Gina Mastrangeli, a member of the worship committee here at the fellowship, and I personally extend a warm welcome to all of you this morning. Our service today is totally virtual, and hopefully soon we will once again be offering hybrid services at our building near Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Thomas Paine Universalist Fellowship is a caring community that aspires to empower people to grow spiritually, to nurture one another, and to work for justice and stewardship of the earth. We welcome you. We welcome you, whoever you are, wherever you are on your spiritual journey. Whatever your background, your gender, identity expression, or whomever you love, we welcome you into our circle of love and compassion and joy. We extend a special welcome to all our visitors today and every day. If you are a newcomer to our worship service online, we invite you to sign our online visitor card. The link to this card appears in the chat, and you can fill it out anytime during the service. If requested, we will send you our e-newsletter and provide you with information about our congregation. We also invite you to join us following the service for our informal online fellowship chit-chat. We welcome our guest speaker today, the Reverend Terry Ofori, who is joining us live from Belize. Reverend Ofori has spoken at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship several times in the past, and always her insights provoke thought and her messages awaken the soul. Her topic today is becoming the beloved community. The term beloved community was made famous by Dr. Martin Luther King when he envisioned a community where everyone is cared for, absent of poverty, hunger, and hate. In the beloved community, human decency will embrace an all-inclusive spirit of sisterhood and brotherhood. King's dream meshes well with our February Soul Matters theme, Widening the Circle. Now, let us open our service by lighting our chalice. Linda Stauffer will lead us.
Into the circle, Reverend Dr. David Breeden. We gather into this circle. We gather into this circle of care to dream, to envision, to embody and achieve the compassion we dream, the justice we envision, the dignity of each in an ever-growing circle of love and justice. Preston will now light the peace lamp. After, let us join together and sing our opening song, Draw the Circle Wide.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Be our song, no one stands alone, standing side by side. to more creation turns. Nothing lost but held forever in God's gracious arms. Draw the circle wide, draw it wider still. Let this be our song, no one stands alone, standing side by side. Draw the circle wide.
Speaker today, Reverend Ofori, is the college chaplain and director of religious and spiritual life at Ursinus College. Previously, she has served as a pastor for churches of varying denominations and held positions at several colleges and universities. She was the first woman and person of color to be named a Robert Washington Scholar. Along with all her responsibilities at Ursinus College, she is pursuing her doctorate at Fordham University. When Reverend Ofori sent me her topic, becoming the beloved community, I Googled that phrase. I was hoping to find ideas for music and pictures. What I found instead were projects, initiatives, workshops, events, book readings, art shows, even a Facebook page dedicated to King's vision of beloved community to build a more just, humane, equitable, and peaceful world. Churches, educational institutions, community groups, and private groups are developing strategies to respond to racial injustice, to grow communities of reconcilers, justice makers and healers, and to strive for a global community that respects the dignity of every human being. This morning, to honor Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy, before Reverend Ofori speaks, we will have a video for our moment of all ages that tells the story of his most famous I Have a Dream speech. Then after Reverend Ofori speaks, in keeping with King's vision, we will sing together Carrie's newcomer song, Room at the Table. Now for our I Have a Dream history lesson.
On a hot day in August 1963, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered a speech that would define the civil rights movement and his legacy. This, of course, was his I Have a Dream speech, delivered on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial during the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
The March on Washington served as a massive push for economic and political justice for African Americans. Held during the year celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, crowds marched on the National Mall to watch a variety of musical performances and speeches. Dr. King, a Baptist preacher and prominent civil rights leader, was scheduled to speak towards the end of the day, his debut on the national stage. Up until that point, King mostly addressed small crowds at black churches, rallies, or fundraisers. This time, he would be seen by nearly 250,000 people on the ground, as well as millions at home watching on television. This was an opportunity to reach a wide audience and persuade the public and the government to take action against racial injustice. The night before, King worked with a close group of advisors to get the speech just right. They worked through the night, settling on a final draft in the pre-dawn hours of August 28. Interestingly, the phrase, "I have a dream," a phrase he used in earlier speeches, was nowhere to be found in this copy. The words wouldn't manifest until almost halfway into Dr. King's speech, when gospel singer Mahalia Jackson, who had performed earlier in the day, called out to him from the sidelines to tell them about the dream. King set his prepared remarks aside and improvised the rest, crafting a soaring speech that would sear into the minds of millions of Americans.
No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
The speech was divided into two parts. The first listed the injustices that African Americans faced: segregation, police brutality, disenfranchisement, and discrimination, and urged a call to nonviolent action. The second launched into King's dream of peace and racial harmony, a vision of a future in which people will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I have a dream.
Highlighting King's skills as a preacher, I Have a Dream was part sermon and part poetry, using rhetorical devices like repetition, rhyme, and vivid metaphor to drive his points home. It was peppered with historic, biblical, and literary references that moved the crowd. This message of struggle and hope became the defining moment not only of King's career, but also the civil rights movement. Both the speech and the March on Washington were credited with helping secure the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. A landmark piece of legislation that ended segregation and banned discrimination on the basis of race or sex in the workplace.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty, we are free at last!
The speech also resonated with activists around the globe. I Have a Dream, the phrase that wasn't even meant to be in his final draft, appeared in political actions all around the world. It's considered one of the world's most transformative and influential speeches, alongside others like Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and Winston Churchill's Blood, Toil, Tears, and Sweat. I Have a Dream is only one of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s many achievements, but it's nonetheless one of the most pivotal.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.
Thank you and welcome. I am so honored to be with you, and even more honored to follow anything that has to do with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. So thank you for the invitation to co-journey with you as we walk together on the spiritual path for today. And so I wanted to begin with a quote by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. about salvation. As you know, he was in the business of saving souls, and that has so many nuances and interpretations. What does that mean to save one soul? And I would invite all of you to think about saving of the soul of our community as we become the beloved community. Now, Martin Luther King said, "Salvation is being on the right road, not having reached destination. And so we are all journeying together toward a greater understanding of each other. But I think most importantly, we're looking at love being our instrument of building and the foundation of what we are building. If we are building a place of belonging, a space for everyone, and widening the circle, and I love that terminology, widening the circle. And so I'm going to talk about what does it mean to become the beloved community? And as Gina had so eloquently stated, that there's projects, there's books, there's a whole lot of different people examining what it means to become the beloved community. And at its foundation, I believe that becoming the beloved community is really about becoming more of you. Becoming. Because you are a part of that community. And so a lot of my work is influenced by the African philosophies of Ubuntu. I'm not sure how many of you have heard of that. That's U-B-U-N-T-U. The late Bishop Tutu used that type of theology. And what it means is that I am because you are, meaning that I cannot fully become who I am until you become fully who you are. And that's where community happens. And so some of the missing pieces to community, it's really the I in community. Churches, you know, often take communion, but they don't commune with one another. And so we become so disengaged. And another principle that I use is called Sankofa. It's an Akan word that means going back to forget, to get what you forgot. There's a symbol of a bird going back and picking up an egg that is forgot, basically like its child. And one of the things that's important, but yet one of the things that we do not like to do, is to remember, which is simply putting back the pieces and the memories that we have. And so sometimes we would rather forget. But the African philosophy of Sankofa says you actually cannot move forward unless you go back to get what you left. You remember, you put it back. You remember what has been dismembered. And so I think what happens is we get stuck at dismemberment and dissonance. And so we become separated from ourselves, which is one of the reasons why I love the notion of widening the circle. Because when we're thinking linearly, which is what our Western world does, we don't have space to go back because we have to keep progressing forward. But when you live within a circle, you're really not going to be falling off the end of the earth as they thought before, as the globe is circular. You can go back and get it and still progress. It's not going to take you behind if we're thinking cyclical. So it's important for us to move out of some of even those systems in which we think that will help us to become the community, because lines create margins. That's where we have marginalized people. I've never considered myself to be marginalized because I don't think linearly. I'm not at the end of anyone's line. There's a circle. And as we said and we sang about, we're widening that circle. So I think it's so important to think about the very basic and simple elements of things. Sometimes we get very heady in our thinking, but we need to continue to keep going down into our hearts. And I think what, most importantly, what Martin Luther King talked about was the love ethic, which is what I think people connect with. Because we all have the capacity to love. If you think about even a person like Adolf Hitler, you know, had a child, or Osama bin Laden, you know, these people had children and they came from people. And so they loved those people. And so sometimes we know how to, even the worst person that we might think of might have some element of love, because I think the divine is in all of us. And I believe that God is love. And so I think of people like yourselves who are journeying together. You know, you're not reaching a destination, but you are on the road to salvation. And, you know, we thought of salvation of souls as being sort of, you know, this revivalist term and people going to heaven. But what does it really mean to save our souls? And so I want to talk about Thich Nhat Hanh. I always say his name incorrectly. If anyone has a better pronunciation, let me know. But I'm going to read about what he talks about. And he recently passed away. And he says, when one tries to recover or to go back or to remember, to become whole again, I think that is the beginning of awakening. People speak about sudden enlightenment. It is not something very difficult to understand. Each of us has undergone that kind of experience in our own life. The distance separating forgetfulness, ignorance, and enlightenment, that distance is actually short. It is so short that it's not any distance at all. One may be ignorant now, but can be enlightened in the next second. The recovering of oneself can be realized in just one portion of 1 second. And to be aware of who we are, what we are doing, what we are thinking, seems to be a very easy thing to do. And yet, it is the most important thing to remember. Starting point of the salvation of oneself. And sometimes where I think religion has somewhat gone astray is that we've spent a lot of time figuring out how to save everyone else, even the world, but we haven't figured out how to save ourselves, or we haven't remembered, because I believe that we have the tools to do so. And so I just want to have us just to reflect on that a little bit. And I want us to then go into how do we become more of ourselves? And I think that comes with remembering, and it comes with remembering our stories. That is the point in which we enter into community. Through our stories and the telling of our stories. So I believe that we could even call ourselves Homo narrans versus Homo sapiens. We are the people who know the story, and that's where our experience comes from. I'd like to share a small story with you. It's a Middle Eastern tale about truth and story, and we're going to talk about how that story is connected to you becoming you and to becoming a part of the beloved community. I'm going to do that right at this moment. All right, can everyone hear that? Okay. I actually cannot.
An old tale from the Middle East. Truth was very unhappy. In his long existence, he seldom knew a gentle smile or a warm greeting. Whenever he walked through the marketplace, people turned away. Some covered their faces, and others screamed and ran in horror. One day, as Truth strode through the marketplace, people hurled obscenities and garbage at him. Truth crawled to a dark corner, sank to the ground, and began to weep. Then there arose a commotion. He heard cheers and laughter and applause, and when Truth looked into the marketplace, walked a beautiful woman. Her hair cascaded down her back. She was dressed in bright colors. She had gold necklaces around her throat, sparkling bracelets on her wrists, and bright gems on every finger. Everyone greeted her as a friend. But when she noticed Truth, she made her way toward him and said, "Brother, why so downcast?"
"Oh," groaned Truth,
It is because I am old, and everyone hates me because I am old. Nonsense, said the woman. I am older than you, and yet the more years I gather to me, the more beautiful I become, and the more people love me. Who are you? Asked Tree. My name is Story. People are afraid of you because you go about the world stark naked. You must admit, unclothed, you are a horrifying sight at times, but I will help you. And before Truth could utter a word, Story removed some of her brightly colored garments, and she completely clothed Truth in them. She put gold chains about his neck, flashing bracelets on his wrists, and a glistening ring on every finger. Arm in arm, Truth and Story walked through the marketplace. For the very first time in his life, Truth was met with smiles and open arms. And it is still the same today. When Truth ventures forth, unclothed, some of us turn away. Others groan and still more scream and run away in horror. But when Truth walks out, clothed in Story's bright radiance, even Truth is met with smiles and open arms. Even Truth is greeted as a flower.
Thank you. So, what we see here is that in order for us to become, we have to tell the truth and live in the truth. And that is the first practice of healing. Telling our story. The story is our testimony. When we talk about the Old Testament, the New Testament, we talk about testaments, we talk about sacred texts. Sacred texts, the Torah, the Quran, the Bible. And all that they are sacred texts, stories of lives of people journeying along the way, trying to figure it all out, trying to get it together. So what I'm encouraging you all to do is to become in touch with your story. What is your story? What is your testimony? In the Black church tradition, there was such a thing as a testimony service. I don't know how many of you have ever heard of that before, but they would give time for the testimony. And people would get up and they would first give honor to God, which is standard, and to the community members and share a struggle that they had, that they went through, and how they were overcome it. Or if they weren't able to overcome it, they would ask for people to pray for them. But in that testimony, if we break down that word, it's the word test. So they were basically saying, this is how I've overcome this test. None of us like to take tests, but tests are critical for evaluation of self, and also to know if you could go to the next level. So the testimony is sort of your change agent. Your story is your change agent. And that is what you bring with you to the community. And so we talk about systems of liberation, and when we protest, we are providing space for unaccounted for narratives. That's what a protest is. It's like, you want to hold up, hey, this is a story that you need to hear. And so that's what we're struggling from. We have the capacity as homo narrans, not homo sapiens, to know how to understand the story of humanity. And when we tell our stories, we are therefore witnessing. And so when people think about, say, a process, like, I don't know how to build a beloved community. You build by becoming you and bringing your story to the table. And so when we look at our struggle as a meeting of stories, we can then see that we're not necessarily protesting systems, but rather we are protesting, we are pro, which is a positive word, we're lifting up our story for people to be heard. And so when we widen the circle, we're actually allowing protest to occur, which is social change. But at the foundation of that widening of the circle is the ethic of love. So let me read a little bit more. Martin Luther King was mocked, really, not just the love your enemies message of nonviolent revolution, but also the message of building self-love, healthy self-esteem, and loving communities. And I think I want us again to focus on becoming more of ourselves. Do we love ourselves? And how do we know if we're doing that? I want you to take a minute to think about that. What does that look like to you? We talk a lot about self-care. Is that the same thing as self-love? There are no right or wrong answers. But I want us to recognize something. And I had a Dr. Jim Lawson, who was a contemporary of Martin Luther King's and spent time learning nonviolent principles of Gandhi, who's actually about 95 now and very acutely aware and very on point. And he spoke with one of my classes, and he shared the notion of his observation that we're in a spiritual crisis, which I do believe. And a lot of the methodologies that we're employing don't have at its foundation the spiritual practice of love. And so he feels that the only way that we can overcome this evil is that if we become more grounded in love. And Bell Hooks, who also recently passed away, she says in her book, Salvation, we cannot effectively resist domination if our efforts to create meaningful, lasting, personal, and social change are not grounded in an ethic of love. James Baldwin says, love takes off the mask that we fear we cannot live without and know we cannot live within. I use the word love here, not merely in the personal sense, but as a state of being or a state of grace. Not in the infantile American sense of being made happy, but in the tough and universal sense of quest and daring and growth. We must become grounded in love of self so that we can actually love our communities. How many times have we seen people who are very angry or upset? We know that there's a lack of love that they've received. They haven't quite gotten that. And so we don't have to react to them, but we can say there's something going on there. They don't have the love that they need. And so then we're called to respect, which just simply means to re-engage, to re-look like spectacles. Look at that person, and I always encourage people to look at people, especially people who appear that they don't like you or they're being difficult. And if we can take a look at them, not staring in a mean way, but really to look within and look at them, respect them, just re-examining is what respect is actually, we can see that there's a lack of love. And so when there is a lack of love, we don't respond with a lack of love, which is normally what reaction does. React, we're just reacting something that's already in our mind. But if we respect them and re-examine, we see there's a lack here. And so lack and lack equal lack. But our reaction says to react negatively to lack, or to criticize that. So when someone is acting, which is basically loving your enemies, when someone is reacting out of a void, you give. That is not our natural reaction, but you give when you see that. And so even when we talk about building community, we actually look for what's broken and we rebuild it. But in our culture, a lot of times we inspect, not respect. We inspect and complain and lift up the broken pieces instead of actually taking on the posture of repairing those broken pieces. And so even in our social justice and protest work, we spend a lot of time pointing out what is wrong. Lots of time. Because we've been in our education system, and even our theological systems are all about deconstruction. But we have to get to a period where we begin to repair, rebuild, and reconstruct. And so building the beloved community, becoming that, work on becoming more of you. Whatever that means, understanding your story, understand why you react. Because if you're reacting, you are reenacting something that you've experienced before. And so there's something going on in you that's causing you to show up a certain way. And of course, we project that onto other people because we're not building within ourselves. And so it really does start with loving of oneself, understanding your narrative. And instead of protesting in a negative way, lifting up the test that you've been through. And by the time you do all of that, you'll see protest as actually a weapon of love and not a weapon of war. Protest. You've passed this test. This is your experience. You're struggling with this. This is what I bring. And sometimes we move past protests to becoming sympathizers or allies with other people. And what I want to say about race relations in America, which a lot of people don't like to bring up, is that this is an all of us story. The people who were enacting their pain on other people that they're scapegoats, that's still a picture of the pain that's in the person who inflicted the pain on someone else. And so it's a family story, quite literally, because most of these people were their family members, tired by the master. But it's also because we've all journeyed on this way together. We're all in this together, and our pain, meaning black people's pain, is white people's pain. And we like to, because we have a linear mindset, we like to divide, you know, have these binaries of black and white. And actually, we're really all in this pain situation of America together. And so I think once white people, which is a construction, so I'm not speaking for, you know, to certain ethnic group, but the construction of whiteness has to get their own narrative together. They've got to go back and see those pieces of their story that they forgot. And they need to put it back together. As black people are protesting, just lifting up the narrative that they had, I think if they are then remembering, and that's what really is happening, people don't want to remember. But we can't go forward without doing that. And so we can't become the beloved community unless we recognize, number one, that we've got to love ourselves. And so most of this hate that's going on is because people don't love themselves. And really, what does that mean and what does that look like? And I think the healing practice of truth telling is critical, but so is ritual. For soul wounds, and what is ritual look like to us? And that's something for you to think about. What is it that you need? And in all of our deconstruction in our country and perhaps some parts of the world, ritual has kind of gone out of the window there. But what is it that we need anthropologically to journey together as humans? And be thinking about what that looks like. And sometimes, so I think for you all, which I love and appreciate about your community, is that you have these chalice lightings and you have these symbols and connecting pieces, and people need that to trigger remembrance. Even smell. I don't know if you introduce smell into your congregation, but in the five senses becoming more human. And in our age of artificial intelligence, we will need more human intelligence, more love. And those people will flock to those spaces. And one of the things I say about this community is that you're very loving. So make an ethic of love a practice that you can ritualize as a weapon of love and not a weapon of war. And how do you do that? Begin to think about that even as you call a new minister. Let that person hear the call from you. And when you call out, be specific in what you're calling for. Because sometimes we call for skill or knowledge, but I think that if we call for love, even if the person is still becoming some other things, I don't know who that word is for, but if the person is still in the process of becoming, if their resource and if they're traveling with love, that might be what you need. Because sometimes we do look for all those other things, but if that foundation of a love ethic isn't there, it's not going to work, because we cannot resist anything without that. And so I would encourage you all, I'm just thinking about you in your journey here as I'm journeying with you, and I don't have, there's no clocks here, which is wonderful, but I don't know what time it is, and so I want to be mindful of that. But think on your journey here. So I'm thinking of just your specific context, moving it home to the fact that, hey, you guys are looking for a leader. Who do you want to lead you? How do you want that to look? Keeping in mind the pure, simple foundation of love, and you can build anything else on that. And so somebody that operates from the heart and not the mind. And of course you would think in these spaces that that's what happens, but that doesn't happen as often as you would think. In these theological spaces, sometimes people are really thinking theology and not people-ology. And I don't, that's not a word, but I think you're in need of healing, lifting up your narratives. When you talk with them, put your narrative center stage in the collective narrative of the community. And then the rituals, collect people to deal with collective trauma. We're all traumatized right now with the pandemic, rituals that lessen shame around identity, all of those things. And then bringing joy in the midst of suffering and crisis contemplation. Someone who can contemplate the journey inward toward self. Because most religious communities do is project their pain onto this image of God, who then becomes morphed into so many other things. But if you begin people to remember their stories and where they're coming from, and then people can then be free to actually go forward into thinking about community. But we get so stuck at the self narrative because we haven't been healed. And so I just challenge you all to seek that healing in this process while you're waiting. And the more healed that you are, you will draw someone to help lead your community that's also healed as well. And so communities usually do attract, just like relationships, you attract people that you need to learn lessons from. And then you say that person was this, that person was that, but you actually needed to learn that lesson. And so I just encourage you all to keep doing what you're doing and letting the leadership that is there really step up to the surface, which I also see happening. And so this is the encouragement for me, that the more you become you, the more beloved you're going to be. And I'm not giving you specifics because you already have the inner wisdom to know that. I think you also need to know that you know. I always tell people that I counsel when I first meet with them, you actually know the answers. My job is to help you draw them out. But I think you know. I don't feel that you're wandering. I think that you know. And so once you get, you know, once the student is ready, the teacher arrives. And so I would just like to encourage this congregation to lift up your love ethic, particularly in the community of Collegeville. Get out of that space and protest and put forward your stories of. And what I find fascinating is all the stories of the people that I meet whenever I come there and how you've been able to come there. And so make space for your stories, even in your worship, lifting up the testimony and seeing yourselves as sacred narratives, particularly for a congregation that doesn't own one particular sacred text. You are the sacred text. And so I don't know what's in there for you all with that, but you're going to take away from that. But I do hope that you see yourselves as sacred texts. You're part of this widening circle and story. And I just encourage you that you are that beloved community, yet becoming that beloved community. And so I think you have the tools. And widen the circle, I think getting out of the space that you're in, because more people need to know about the kind of work you're doing. So I just encourage you to lift up what you're doing together as a community as well. And so that's my encouragement to you today. That's less of a sermon, but I'm just feeling where you are and your search and all of that. And I think just become more of yourself and be love. It's within you. You have the inner wisdom. So thank you all for letting me share this very simple, basic encouragement with you all today. As I'm looking at people, I'm seeing people, and meeting you all before, just feeling your yearnings to become some community that you already are. And just keep doing it. Thank you so much for having me from Belize. I thought I was going to be in Pennsylvania. With me, you never know where I'm going to be. So thank you for journeying with me. I know that could cause some angst for some people, but I am kind of a free spirit. So thank you, Gina, for, you know, I forgot to tell her actually that I was out of the country. I was like, you know, I forgot to tell you. She was like, okay, well, we're going to get this together. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. And it's always a pleasure. And I always learn something from you when I'm in your community. So thank you for the love. Sometimes telling it is better when you show it. And you guys have always shown that love to me. And like I said, I go lots of places and people want to pontificate. What can we do to help, you know, the Black community? Well, you could invite me over to your house. You could just give me a drink of water. I mean, simple stuff sometimes, you know. Just say hello. And so you guys have practiced what you're putting out there, what you're preaching, and that to me is extremely important. Because I've had other people who haven't done that. And so thank you for the invitation. Thank you.
Speaking, I'm now going to share a video of Room at the Table, which we can sing together, and that's probably the best way to capstone Terry's comments that we could have.
Let our hearts not be hardened to those living on the margins. There is a room at the table for everyone. This is where it all begins. This is how we gather in. There is room at the table for everyone. Too long we have wandered, burdened and undone, but there is room at the table for everyone. Let us sing the new world in. This is how it all begins. There is room at the table for everyone. There is room for us all. The Lord's gift is too small. There is room at the table for everyone. There's enough if we share.
We are going to move into the part of our service, Matters of the Heart, where folks who are experiencing a joy that is lifting them up or a sorrow that is pulling them down to share that with us. We'll have a short musical interlude so people have time to gather their thoughts, and then they can either use Zoom raise hand feature, which I'll talk us through, or they can put something into chat if they prefer. And we will use either mechanism to share those thoughts. So let me go ahead and get that playing for us. We can bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The words will show up here on our screen in just a moment.
The Promise and the Practice, Pastoral Prayer Number 2 by Viola Abbott. Let us call upon that light which shines in each of us to give us the strength to walk together into the future and do the work that is necessary, which does not end here today. Let us have the wisdom to lovingly have the conversations we need to have with each other, that we must have with each other in order to grow this faith in radical love and inclusion. Let us now sing our closing song, We Will Not Stop Singing. After, Lindy Fisher will read the announcements.
Till